All right, nice to have everyone back with us as we celebrate a little bit of baseball here in this crazy, uncertain world that we live in every day. You never know what's going to happen. It's almost like an unfolding baseball story. Every day it's another story. Every day it's another press conference. You never know what is going to be said and what's true and not true. But baseball for us has always been there. As James Earl Jones says, it's been the constant, and that is what baseball is. And someone who appreciates that is Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter with Sports Info Solutions. And Mark is a regular with us. And Mark, it's a pleasure to have you with us. How are you?
I'm good. I have been avoiding the news. I'm on a news boycott today. Looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I've gone that way myself, and I know that there's some speculation as to when we may or may not have baseball, and things change every single day, and we haven't gotten to our apex yet. And until we get to that point, I'm not going to worry about what anyone is saying until Dr. Fauci tells me what's going on. So we'll leave the politics away for a second, but I'm glad that you're here. And we can talk some ball with you.
Sure.
On the show tonight, we've really concentrated. It's been terrific talking about the 2012 playoff run of the Giants. And, Mark, when I go back and look at it, you know, it's funny. I'll say this. You know, when we talk about baseball, we say, oh, the team won in 2012. They won the World Series. But then when you go back and look at the games and look at the innings – and look at the pitch that had to be made, or the hit that had to be gotten with two out, or the defensive play that had to be made. And you start unwinding the ball, so to speak, to get to the center of it. And the icing on the cake is winning the World Series. But to get there, boy, it is not simple. And for the Giants, maybe the most improbable run of all, getting through Cincinnati down 2-0, getting past St. Louis down 3-1, and then wiping out the Tigers in a tough series, even though they swept them. So let's go back and get some of your thoughts about the Giants in 2012.
Yeah, I think improbable is the best way to describe it. I was trying to come up with parallels, and certainly I guess the Red Sox coming back from 3-0 against the Yankees one. Probably the more apt one would be something like the 85 Royals, who were down 3-1 against the Blue Jays in the LCS, and then 3-1 against the Cardinals in the World Series, and won both, but they didn't have the extra round then. That one comes to mind. The 81 Dodgers had to go through three rounds. That's not a bad one either. And I know we don't necessarily like the Dodgers here, but if you think about it, they had to go through Montreal, which was a struggle. Then they were down. They were down first 2-0 to Houston. 1-3 in a row, then had to beat Montreal in game five in Montreal, and then we're down 2-0 to the Yankees and won 4 straight against the Yankees. Those are the parallels. But if you just look at the Reds series, the Reds outscored them. The Reds outhit them. The Reds are 15-31 at home and up 2-0 at home, just needing to win one. And Posey hit .211, Crawford hit .182, Pence hit .200, Belt was 1-for-13. There was a lot of good in that series, and they still found a way to win three in a row and get to the LCS. So that to me is kind of speaks to the improbability of it all.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter, and if fans, you want to follow him during the week, he's always coming up with some interesting stuff. You know, I think of teams down 3-1, and it's, you know, so improbable. But maybe the way baseball is played now, down 3-1 isn't the end of the world, because you just have to win a game, and these teams are so good now, and the pitching is so unusual, the way pitchers are used and the way the game is played, that every game now is sort of, it's even more its own story. It's not like you have the ace coming back and you got to beat Verlander and Scherzer, or you got to beat Koufax and Drysdale and Marischal and Perry. It's the game is different today. Maybe 3-1 today isn't as insurmountable, I guess that's what I'm saying, as it used to be.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. You don't have the threat of, like, a guy pitching 1-4-7 right, as much anymore. Now, I guess the threat is 1-5 and then release in 7 seems to be the trendy way to approach it. But, yeah, I guess that's a fair way to bring it.
All right, so but the Red Series, as we talked about tonight, was interesting because Cueto was gone after a third of an inning in the first game. How about that?
Yes. Yeah, game one, things got all screwy right from the start, and the Giants didn't take advantage of it. But what it meant, though, was that he wouldn't pitch again in the series, and I think that came into play in game five when you had Leitos pitching and Posey hits the grand slam. I think you were in much better shape in game five than you necessarily would have been if Cueto was pitching.
You know, again, we forget Leitos faced Posey in game one. Leitos came out of the pen and went four innings, and Posey did hit a home run off him in that game, and of course hit the slam off him in game five. But Kane and Bumgarner pitched the first two games of that series for the Giants, and two ugly games. Bronson Arroyo, basically a couple of hits in seven innings, and then the patchwork Red pitching staff got him through game one. And so Kane and Bumgarner were the ones who got beat, and it was up to Vogelsong to right the ship against Homer Bailey, and barely could do that.
Yeah, 2-1 and a squeaker in game three, certainly. With the run in the 10th inning on the error. And, like, if you think of, like, who's going to make an error in a really big spot, Scott Rolen would have been probably the last guy on the list. And he makes the misplay that winds up bringing in the go-ahead run. And you win it 2-1 just on Vogelsong. So it's funny. I was looking at him, and this applies more to the LCS than it does to the DS. But Ryan Vogelsong, he has his comeback, and his fastball is very sharp, like 91, 92, that he was able to, I guess, locate well and effectively and pitch well with it. He had a changeup, but it was never really a good changeup throughout his entire career, other than 2012 and other than the 2012 postseason when he was very, very, very good with it. And as we get into the Cardinals series, I can get into that more. But he pitched five good innings in game three, and he got them to game. He helped get them to game four.
Romo was a big part of the Red series, and also, of course, the Cardinals, and then the Tiger series. He was the closer. But there's a name that comes up, and I don't know if you've researched it. I'm just going to throw it out there anyway. And it was George Kontos. George Kontos, every time you turned around, he was coming in the game in the middle innings, and he did a great job for the Giants.
I will confess that I did notice that when I was looking into the numbers for this, this I guess, postseason evaluation, and I've got it in front of me here. It was only the DS where he was good. In the DS, he went 3 2/3 innings, and pitched in four different games, got out some different spots, only allowed two hits, nothing else. Not as good in the CS or WS, but helped them through, as you said, coming in a couple of key situations and pitching all right.
Yeah, he gave a couple of runs. I know 2/3, so he gave up a couple of runs there as the series went on. But Bochy went to him a lot, and we forget about George Kontos in 2012. But how about Marco Scudero? And eventually, we're going to get to St. Louis, the seventh game at San Francisco in the pouring rain and the last out. And I'll never forget him looking up in the sky and pouring rain and the ball coming down. But, boy, you want to talk about big hits, and you look at game four against the Tigers, maybe the biggest hit to win the game. But how about Marco Scudero?
Yeah, okay, so we skipped to the LCS and the World Series here. The LCS first, so he nearly gets injured pretty severely by the holiday slide, which was a big story early in the series. Still gets 14 hits in the series, which is tied for the most by any player in a single postseason series, whether it was a World Series or an LCS. No one did it in a DS, obviously. The thing about Scudero that year was there was no pitch where you could get him. And I think that this was probably true throughout his career because he was a guy that was a high contact guy, right? He didn't strike out. He was among the leaders in being the toughest hitter to strike out. If you look at his batting average, his pitch type, like this, his batting average against curveballs, 275. That's 50, 60 points above major league average. Sliders, 277. That's probably 90 points above major league average. Fastball, 314. That's probably 20 points above major league average. Changeups, 353. That's probably a decent amount above major league average. Cutters, 370. That's above major league average. It wasn't anything you could get him. You could get him out with.
Well, he was amazing, just amazing. I've seen him hit big home. I saw him hit a big home run off Mariano Rivera.
Yes.
When he was with the A's, I'll never forget that one as well. But they couldn't get the guy out, And I forgot. I forgot about a lot of the things that that you bring up. Again, hitting against certain pitches, how important those numbers are. That in those days we didn't think about those numbers. You know, in 2012 we didn't really have those numbers to talk about, did we?
Yeah, and I think too that it gets to a point that sometimes the unlikely guy can be the guy in the postseason if he just makes contact. I'm thinking like Craig Counsell a little bit. I'm thinking there was a postseason series with Mike Devereaux where the Braves won, and he was like an LCS MVP. Skid Row is certainly a good example of that. Those are your pesky guys. I remember when Curt Schilling worked on ESPN, he always said that those were the guys that he hated to face the most. He didn't care about facing the sluggers because he knew he could get them out. He knew he could get them off balance. But someone like Marco Scudero would be a major pain in the butt to him because he could hit any pitch type.
Well, I was just thinking of Denny Doyle. That name, I don't know if you remember that name.
I like how you pulled these names from like the 1970s, and I'm like, oh, yeah, sure.
Yep. That's funny. I know no one knows what I'm talking about, but Denny Doyle, look him up. I think he drove maybe the Red Sox crazy. I forget what, but he was a.
Oh, you're thinking Brian Doyle, maybe.
Maybe Brian Doyle, but those were the kind of players. You're right that they would come out of nowhere. And look at Ryan Terrio, got the big hit to get it going in the winning rally against Detroit.
The World Series. Like to me is like an anticlimax because you have Sandoval hitting the three home runs, and like for my money, I remember watching it. I felt like the series was kind of the momentum was such that the Giants weren't going to be beat because of that moment and because of just how everything had fallen in the right place for them. Terrio, you're talking about only one hit in the World Series, but came at the. At the right time, Sandoval hit 500, won the MVP. The other thing that I did want to bring up too was Tim Lincecum and how good he was that postseason in relief after the 5 ERA in the regular season. If you combine the Red Series and the Tiger Series, 11 innings, one run, three hits, 16 strikeouts, one walk, and back to the changeup. This will come full circle. I mentioned Ryan Vogelsong. Changeup was great. Tim Lincecum changeup in the postseason. 19 at-bats ended with a changeup, zero base hits.
Wow. Yeah, amazing. How about Barry Zito and the game against the Cardinals? And, of course, he opened up the World Series.
Yeah, that, I think, qualified as highly unexpected, despite the fact that he was a decent winner for them during the season. But yeah, like it was like he rediscovered the curveball a little bit, I think, in that postseason. And as he said, a very effective start against the Cardinals with backs to the wall. And then World Series just did enough and was good enough to get a win there. The other thing, and I don't have the number in front of me on this, but I would bet that if you looked up numbers with men on base, that the Giants did very well that postseason. And the opponents did not, because it seems like Vogelsong had a game like this, Zito had a game like this, where they gave up more hits than innings pitched, but gave up nothing, which makes me think that they did very well with men on base. Also, I just watched a highlight video from the postseason, and there were all these great defensive plays, too. Crawford made a couple, Scudero made one, Pence made a catch in the right field corner, if you remember that one down the line, where he dove and made a great play. The Giants' defense was not, like, all around great that season. They had a couple of pretty good players. They had Crawford, they had Posey, they had Belt. But in the key spots in the postseason, they got the plays that they needed to win games.
And that brings us full circle. That's exactly what I said when we started. When you start peeling away the layers of the onion, you realize what's underneath, and that's the way you win a World Series. Boy, Mark A. Simon says, always a pleasure to have you with us. Defensive projects, you're always working on one, and you asked me during the week to give you my recollection of when I first realized perhaps that Major League defense was Major League defense. Tell me about this little project you're doing.
Sure. So we did a thing this past week trying to evaluate who the best defensive player of the 21st century is. and it turned into a fan poll, and it came down to Andrelton Simmons against Matt Chapman. They're currently polling head-to-head right now, winner announced on Monday. But I wanted to do something that was bigger and broader that looked at, like, history a little bit, and that talked to people of all different generations, yourself included, people of my age included, 45, and people that are younger. So right now I have been sending out emails at a pretty torrid rate, and there will be more going out, just asking people the question, who's the best defensive player you've ever seen, and what did he do that impressed you the most? And I liked your answer, and yours is the only one that has said Luis Aparicio so far.
Well, and you know, it's funny, because I went back to the time when I said, wow, that's what Major League Defense is all about. And it was in, I guess it was sort of the mid-60s, probably. And the Orioles trained in Miami in those days. And I was at the University of Florida, and I would come home, I guess, in March and see the spring training games at Miami Stadium. And Aparicio was the shortstop for the Orioles. And, you know, there weren't many people that would go out early to the games. And, of course, I loved it, and I would be out there early. And I watched him take infield. And for the first time ever, you know, and I'd been to games before, obviously in New York, as in Brooklyn, but I was just a kid. So the only major league games I really had seen in the 60s were exhibition games. So I'm watching him take infield well before the game. And it was incredible to me that his hands never moved. The glove never moved. And I'm used to seeing, you know, ground balls hit and, you know, choppy, and you move the hands around and, you know, the grainy pictures of Rizzuto and Pee Wee Reese and all this kind of stuff. When I saw this guy, it was like he was a machine. It was like there was just no movement. The ball, I don't care how it was hit, how hard it was hit, where it was hit, that glove never moved. The ball went in the glove and came out flawlessly, and I never forgot it. So for me, that was when I realized Major League Defense was Major League Defense.
Yep, my guys are Ozzie Smith and Keith Hernandez. As someone that started watching in 1981, 82, that's right at the time when those Cardinals teams were starting to get good. They were a frequent opponent of the Mets, and then when the Mets got Keith Hernandez, it was easy to watch him 162 times a year. And he was ridiculous. Best defensive first baseman I've seen in almost 40 years of watching. And Ozzie Smith, I think, kind of it speaks for itself. He's the best, and I don't think that necessarily that anyone will ever surpass him.
Mm. Well, it's a great project. I'm looking forward to seeing the results of that. Mark, thank you so much for being on with us, and have a good Saturday night, and we'll talk to you next week. Mark A. Simon says on Twitter. Thanks, Mark.
You got it. Thank you.
All right. That is Mark A. Simon says on Twitter, Sports Info Solutions. Follow him on Twitter. It's really a lot of fun during the week. All right. More coming up. KNBR 680-1045, the sports leader.